I'm very excited about this. Some of the most successful startups had a rocky start and had to readjust their thoughts on strategy, market, and products to make it work. How do you know when you need to review your plans and at what cost? We chat to some entrepreneurs who learned the hard way exactly what it takes to turn obstacles into opportunities. Let's do this. So this particular next conversation I'm very excited for. I just want to say before we even begin that I'm involved in this particular product. I'm very proud to be involved. But the man, the co-founder and the CEO of HappyPay, Wesley Bullitt, is right here today. Wesley, how are you doing, brother?
I'm good. So have you?
I'm very good, man. Awesome. Listen, I'm very excited to be chatting with you. Wesley, currently the co-founder and CEO of HappyPay, bring experiences from previous companies he's worked with. HappyPay is a buy now, pay later that allows for payments to be made in installments rather than in single lump sums. Okay, how would you explain my involvement without me blowing my own horn? How would you explain what's my involvement in this particular?
I mean, first and foremost, you're a founding shareholder, obviously. And secondly, I think that you guys, so you, Maps, Sarah, Ayanda, and Boiti are, I guess we would term it social distributors, you know, building trust and taking HappyPay to the market on your platforms and kind of building trust around it, I think is probably the core function.
Thanks, brother. Yeah. This business is really going to change many lives, and I'm looking forward to this particular episode. You are the co-founder and CEO of HappyPay, bringing experiences from previous companies that you've worked with. Vacation Club as well, that I've heard?
Yeah, so that was a entertainment business we started about 10 years ago. I actually started that while I was at university at Vega, and it just started to grow really quickly, and basically coming out of university, I went full-time into that business. A lot of learning there. There's, you know, an entertainment business is a whole bunch of different kind of businesses in one, logistics, marketing, and a whole bunch more. So learned a lot there and then moved into, you know, other roles and industries along the way, and have now kind of found myself in fintech, which is another new universe, but one I'm really enjoying.
So HappyPay is a buy now, pay later that allows payments to be made in installments rather than a simple large sum. Let's talk about what this can do to changing people's lives in South Africa. I think let's start right from the top.
Yeah, I think, look, installment payments, it's nothing new necessarily, right? But I think the way that we're delivering it is new and novel. We allow the everyday South African to access zero interest credit by using the data that they have available to share with us in the form of bank statements, so 90 days with the bank transactions. And there's enough data in that for us to make a lending decision in real time and extend zero interest credit so that individuals can make the purchases that they want to make or need to make at any point in the month and have, you know, what shouldn't be the luxury, but the luxury of splitting that over the next two paychecks.
How did you decide to start this particular company? What was it about it?
So at the time of founding, we were seeing this, you know, burgeoning kind of demand for installment payments globally. We, you know, the industry had also started up in South Africa, and we were seeing this monumental shift, which, you know, is something that doesn't happen, you know, many times in a generation, but where you're seeing Gen Z and millennials switching over from the use of credit cards over to the likes of installment payments and buy now, pay later, and actually choosing that, you know, over traditional credit, you know, for a multitude of reasons, mainly because, you know, there's this, you know, misalignment with banking, traditional banking, and you know, the younger generations are worried about getting into long-term debt and all of the fees and interest that is associated with those types of facilities. And so we saw this huge kind of like growing vertical in buy now, pay later, but also an opportunity to kind of revolutionize the way that it's delivered. And by that, I mean what I was speaking about earlier, which is using kind of the data set available to us to lend responsibly. So to make sure that individuals are able to kind of access what they can afford at any given point in time, rather than, you know, the BNPL global approach, which has been helicopter drop money to kind of whoever wants it, and then they must figure out how to pay it back, right? In the local context of South Africa, there's danger in that. You know, we're a credit drunk nation, if you will.
I like that. Yeah. Credit drunk nation. I grew up with a mother who was very good at doing these kind of things. So I wish I had told her, "Mom, you are credit drunk," but I would have got a backhand. Explain credit drunk, because I think that is a great term.
I think there's a huge amount of credit penetration in South Africa. So there's a lot available to consumers. And I think consumers aren't necessarily fully made aware or educated on what on the facilities that they're taking out at the point that they take them out. And over time, these facilities are becoming more and more available in a digital presence. So like, you know, being able to apply online and get a loan, a personal loan within, you know, a short space of time without, because you need it now, but not necessarily because it's the right thing for you now, right?
Like having a fight with someone and then going to apply for a gun.
Totally.
You like, you shouldn't have a gun now.
No.
You should have a time for you to calm down and then get a gun in a couple of months, or else you're going to shoot someone.
Yeah, you should probably go and see a therapist or a counselor before purchasing that gun.
There it is. It's a great example, I think.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we see in the market and what we're trying to combat with our product design.
Okay, let's simplify this for the person. A mother who's in a single household, has a job, has four kids. How is this going to help her?
So depending on what she wants to purchase. So for example, we've just done a partnership with Teneo, which is South Africa's kind of like biggest online school. And for example, there, in certain circumstances, there are auxiliary costs associated with the schooling, right? Like whether that be extramural activities or, you know, stationary or, you know, the multitude of costs that come with that type of, you know, situation. And so now that mother could, you know, if she had a lump sum that she had to pay at a certain time of the month, let's say it was in January, she could split that over the next 2 months, making that an easier purchase, making January a little bit of an easier month, which we know is, you know, we're in January now, so we know that it's a tough one. And that would not be done at the expense of her, you know, ability to repay that loan and her ability to build her credit score, etc., because she would only be lent the amount that she has the liquidity to service over the next 2 months.
Okay, let's talk about the challenges of fintech in 2024. Like, how hard is it to get involved in? What are the difficulties? What are the pros and cons? Let's talk about all that so people can learn.
Yeah, so fintech is obviously kind of a big buzzword at the moment.
Break it down for us.
It really is just, you know, the building of taking traditional products and building them into kind of a more kind of digital version, one that's accessible kind of in real time. And so there's a huge amount of innovation there, which is great. And it's, you know, a fast growing sector with lots of competition, and in a big, you know, for most of the time you're competing with you know, big traditional players. You also have the option to partner with big traditional players, right? There's synergy there that can definitely be unlocked. And there are many players, right? So it's really about you know, how do you differentiate yourself against them? You know, from a brand perspective, which is something that we're really focused on doing at Happy Pay. And a big part of that's not necessarily like a logo and what we say on a reel, but more about delivering on our promises and ensuring that kind of the fabric of what we build is what we say. And so I think that's a way to differentiate in a, you know, cluttered fintech landscape.
Okay. What do you think, like, how do you sell the particular product of Happy Pay to merchants? What are the benefits for them? Because I know you have incredible merchants, Makosa, you have all these incredible merchants that are involved and a lot of people coming in fast. Because it's funny, because I've spoken to one of our partners and on a phone call, I was like, yeah, bro, speak to Wesley. You put him in the room with someone and he usually walks out and he's got the deal. What is the sales pitch to be able to get, you know, merchants to come on board into Happy Pay?
Yeah, so we were lucky in kind of South Africa that we weren't the first Bynar Peleda. Mm. So we were able to spend a lot of time with merchants prior to building the product to really find out what their issues with incumbent solutions were, where they were being serviced, where they weren't. And so we could build around solving those problems, which has been our focus. And so, you know, when selling to merchants, a lot of the time we're just really giving them feature sets and a product design that we, you know, that we know they want because they told us. And so I think that has definitely made our journey a lot easier than necessarily the incumbents who came in being the first, because there's a lot more learnings there than you know, the position that we found ourselves in.
Okay, so do South Africans trust being online? Because I think since before COVID, I think there was a bit of a, and then during COVID, we had no choice but to go online. Is it improving for South Africans to get access? But a lot of people have difficulties having access to online products or online businesses. Do you feel like it's improving with people trusting online businesses and online concepts?
I think it's probably a double-edged answer. The first thing is, e-commerce is definitely booming in South Africa, and you can see that by kind of like Amazon now entering the market, you know, the prolific growth of online retailers, you know, like Takealot, et cetera. Yeah. So younger generations and older generations are definitely, you know, coming into the e-commerce market. So that's the first thing. I think there is a growing trust of e-commerce retail. Mm-hmm. People know they're going to get their goods. They know that they can send them back if they don't like them, etc.
Is that middle class and upper, or is the lower LSM as it, well starting to
trust? It's growing in the lower LSM, but that comes down to logistics. So you've got players like Pargo, etc., which are helping make shipping accessible. So not necessarily it being your product being shipped to your house, but it being shipped to a pickup point that's near. And I think that's a big, the logistics piece is a big part of bringing the trust element in and bringing kind of, you know, the broader South Africa into the market. So that's the one side. That's obviously just the e-commerce piece. And then online, in terms of like financial services and payments, it's an interesting space. South Africans are a little bit reluctant to trust online kind of, you know, financial services. And we see that in one very interesting customer behavior, which is, we will do, for example, an affordability on account, and a customer will then link a bank card that's linked to a separate account for the repayment.
Okay.
And what that means is, to us and what we've asked customers, is that in the past, there's been South African kind of financial services players that have charged them fees that they didn't know about or interest portions that they didn't know about, etc. And so they prefer to rather manually make the payments instead of waiting for the payment to come off of that card. And I think that that shows an obvious kind of distrust, which is something quite interesting, you know, that going into this beforehand, you probably, you know, we didn't know necessarily, right? But something that, yeah, speaks to that distrust element.
All right. Now, we're trying to have people learn not just about your company, but just about creating, you know, being, you know, you're one of the co-founders and just being able to learn from you. If you could have spoken to yourself before you started this company, what lessons would you tell younger version of you to be able to be an entrepreneur? What kind of lessons would you say you would have taught your younger version of yourself?
So I think the one thing that I would suggest is that if you have an idea, just go for it. The reason being, obviously, you know, you're going to figure it out along the way. And as you iterate, whatever that thing is that you want to do, you know, becomes better and kind of reveals itself. And so I would just say, spend less time planning and more time actually doing and executing, because that's where the value, you know, is unlocked, in my opinion.
What's the biggest mistake that you've made in Happy Pay?
The biggest mistake in
Don't say pay. Getting involved with Sivan Gesi. That's not gonna, that could get awkward.
No, that was the best. That was the best part. The biggest mistake. That is a difficult one.
Could be a lesson, because mistakes are lessons.
Totally. I think that the biggest mistake we ever actually made in Happy Pay, and this is putting all the cards on the table, was in the beginning building out our MVP, we made use of some outsourced development expertise. And I would just say that as a tech company, one should actually never do that. That is the core kind of IP in your business, and that has to be internal. Because that's kind of where the, you know, a fintech or any other you know, tech business kind of goes to live or die. So that would be my my suggestion.
Being an entrepreneur, if you can give any advice to entrepreneurs out there who are trying to start off, trying to get into fintech, what would you tell them? Like, what kind of things, you know, if you could share knowledge to be able to get the industry bigger and more successful, what did you tell new entrepreneurs?
I would say look for kind of big problems that need solving. You know, and sometimes those problems start in small niches. You know, a lot of really big global companies have started off servicing a niche in a kind of a really prolific way and grown from there. I would say that fintech or these types of businesses in Africa are more needed than ever, and with the infrastructure behind, you know, building these types of businesses growing, and, you know, especially in the South African context, I think there's enough infrastructure to get started on these types of projects relatively easily. I would just say, try build products that that make a difference to people's lives.
So you have an incredible product that's very fun and out there that is needed. There's a product that is very, very perfect for South Africa's people. There are the competitors. How do you deal with your competitors? You can say the cliche of going, oh, no, my competitors, ourselves. But how do you deal with competitors popping up?
We see competition as, you know, something positive. We kind of like the, you know, friendly sport of competition. We think that it pushes kind of us to, you know, work to being as unique as we can, whether that be in our communication or the product. And so we welcome competition and enjoy kind of the friendly kind of sparring around it.
I love that. Okay, so your marketing, I've seen a lot of it. It's obviously all of it. It's fun. It's in your face. There's recognizable faces. It's quirky. There's great sounds. Was that a conscious decision to be able to have it friendly, inviting, in your face, and having some very familiar faces involved in the company? How did that come about?
Yeah, totally. So, I think from day one, that's been a big focus of ours, is differentiating on brand. Because at the end of the day, if everyone has a very kind of similar technical kind of USP, then, you know, one of the ways to differentiate is obviously through a brand that people can kind of attach to and grow to kind of love. So that was definitely an intentional choice. And I kind of come from a branding and marketing background. So for me, it's something that's always kind of on, you know, on the front of my, of kind of my thinking. It's been super fun working with you guys, you know, an epic bunch of people, and really kind of building a go-to-market that's centered around, you know, building trust with the consumer online. Which goes back to the thing that we were chatting about earlier, right? Which is the distrust of financial services. And I think that building a brand and having it, you know, distributed by shareholders that people know and trust definitely speaks to kind of those, you know, that end.
If you could have your ambitions for the brand with Happy Pay, how would you want it to grow? What is your vision? Because I think it's the kind of business, it's not just about making money. I feel like you can't be a person that just wants to make money in this particular type of business, because I think what I've learned from you is that you care for people and you can see what it can do to change lives. What is your ambition for Happy Pay?
So the basic ambition is giving everyone access to financial services that can serve as building blocks for their lives, right? One of the main ways that we're trying to kind of achieve that with Happy Pay is lending on the back of affordability, right? So not necessarily just a credit score, because a credit score, you know, tells you about past propensity to pay, but it's quite hard to start from the bottom and build that score up. But there's enough data in the world to lend with enough knowledge that it's de-risked to us as the lender. to individuals, you know, based on that that affordability, and then allow those individuals to make those repayments and build their credit score through that. So it's really about like building a ladder that can bring anyone into kind of the financial kind of ecosystem. And we know that the higher up that ladder you go, the more discounted the risk is in the products. Like, so it becomes more affordable the higher up that ladder you go. And so that's what it's really about from, you know, a basic sense. And I think going forward, we'd like to build more financial services products that do what we do in the installment space, but in other, you know, verticals.
So you're in a country, South Africa, tip of Africa, very different to a country like Japan, China, America. If you were if you started this company in America, how would you do things differently? Bigger economy, more money, more people online. How has that made you pivot being in South Africa?
Yeah, so we intentionally started online first because of the risk profile of consumer that we would encounter there. And you use that period where you're not necessarily servicing the whole market to really refine your risk model. Because at the end of the day, that's, you know, that's kind of the core IP of what we're doing. And so I think in the US, that might be slightly different because it's a larger audience with, you know, deeper pockets and the risk profile is lower. It's lower risk than lending in Africa. So I think that you know, we've focused a lot more on our risk element here than we would have if we were in North America. You know, there's value in that because we're generating IP that's you know, that really holds weight in our market. But yeah, I guess that would be the fundamental difference.
Let's talk about investment. If someone wants to start a business, they have an idea. You said earlier, if you have an idea, just do it. But you're struggling with investment. What advice can you give people trying to start a business? How to get investment? How to get involved? People ready to be able to back them and with their great idea? Because sometimes great ideas aren't enough.
Totally. That's very true. Access to capital is yes, is kind of everything, right? And learning how to kind of you know, get that right, as well as be resilient enough to hear, you know, 90% of the conversations as no's. So look, the first thing is get started, which I was saying earlier. If you've got an idea, get started, flesh it out, find you know, co-conspirators that are willing to sweat it out with you on the battlefield, and then refine your pitch and, you know, what you are taking to market. Test that, get some initial feedback from the market. Make sure that you're not just building in a silo where, you know, in your world, this product really is important and is solving big problems. But if you haven't actually spoken to the end consumer about that, you might be telling yourself a story. And so that would be the first thing. Get started, get an MVP out. There's lots of you know, easy mechanisms to do that these days in you know, drag and drop builders, etc. Even if it has to be manual, get some feedback from the market, and then once you're happy with what you're doing, you've got a pitch that kind of makes sense. You've tested that against maybe one or two you know, VCs that you know, venture capitalists that you trust or analysts that are in that market, and you're happy. Then you know, you go out to the broader capital markets and have as many conversations as possible. Start off with those conversations, not necessarily as a raising conversation, but you know, they could start off just by you know, asking for some advice. Often conversations about advice end up going quite far down the road and can even end up in funding. So I would say, yeah, that's kind of the one aspect. And the second aspect is have lots of conversations, be resilient. Many people are going to tell you no. That doesn't mean that you won't succeed. It doesn't mean that you don't have a good idea. Sometimes it's just not an investment fit for whoever you're speaking to. So, yeah.
So, brother, it's been a pleasure to chat to you. I've learned a lot about this particular product. And I feel like every time I speak to you, I learn more and more. And every time I speak to people on the side of the road who know that I'm involved in Happy Pay, they're very excited and they want to know more about it. So I look forward to seeing what we can do. And I love to be able to get involved in projects that can actually change the world, inverted commas, and still people get employed. So thank you so much. And I look forward to working with you and doing more magical things.
Thanks for having me, Siv. Yes, it was a great conversation.
Great job, man.